So I'd like to talk to us today with the help of the Lord about being a politician or a representative. So I'd like for us to consider a couple definitions. Just thinking about the type of government that we have had it in our United States for a long time. We call it a representative type government. In many cases, we define it that way. It's not a monarchy, it's not a dictatorship, and by and large, we all feel pretty strongly about that, and that's what makes us Americans, if you will. So, Abraham Lincoln said, of the people, by the people, for the people, I believe, in his Gettysburg Address. And that's something that that address has went down in history, that speech, is very noteworthy. It is by a man that I believe all Americans respect today. At the time, he wasn't very popular. In fact, there was so much animosity towards him that someone took his life. We all remember that account in our history books. And as I was thinking about this thought, meditating on it, that I had to realize that a politician and a representative is not the same person. Politicians don't make good representatives. And a representative doesn't make a very good politician. So I'd like for you to, I'm not going to talk about our leaders. I'm just trying to use this as an illustration for us to start thinking about something that will apply to our spiritual well-being. A representative in a legislative or other business is an agent. It's a deputy or a substitute who supplies the place of another or others, being invested with his or their authority. So a representative is someone that if you are my representative, then you would conduct yourself to the best of you knew how, the way I would conduct myself. An attorney is the representative of his client or his employer. A member of the House of Commons is a representative of his constituents or those that elected him and of the nation. In matters concerning his constituents only, that means the people that he is representing, he is supposed to be bound by their instruction. But in enacting the laws of the nation, he is supposed to not be bound by their instructions, but as he acts for the whole nation. So a representative. Thinking today, what we're going to get with our thought is, are we a representative of Christianity, or are we trying to be a politician? A politician. I looked it up and I found a definition that kind of fits with the thought that I have today. It says cunning using artifice. A man of artifice or deep contrivance. I don't know about you all, but I had to look a couple of those words up. Make sure I understood them right. Artifice means stratagem. That's pretty complicated too. It means An artifice means an artful or ingenious device in a good or bad sense. In a bad sense, it corresponds with trick or fraud. Do you see how that a politician don't make a very good representative? A contrivance is a plot or a scheme. So some of the definition we could have for a politician is someone that's cunning. We know what that means. Maybe shrewd at using a tricky scheme. Cunning at using a tricky scheme. So I have an example I'd like for us to consider in the scripture of a politician. You know there was any politicians in the scripture? I believe there was one in the Old Testament. As a man that used a deep contrivance, a deep plot or scheme to bring about an end that he shouldn't have ever been part of. His name was Balaam. Y'all know about Balaam? Balaam was a man that lived back in the time of the Israelites in their journey through the wilderness from Egypt to the Canaan land in the Old Testament. There's a story. And there's little indications that his story was so impactful that all the way through the scripture, his name pops up ever so often. And I'd like to begin today with a verse in the book of Revelation, the second chapter and the 14th verse. And in here is a passage that in my Bible, it's in red letters. And the reason it's in red letters is because John, that wrote the book of Revelations, heard Jesus speaking to him, and he wrote them down as Jesus' words to the world, and particularly to the seven churches that were in Asia. I believe these were actual churches, congregations, and he addressed them because they all had some needs. And I begin reading in verse 12. It says, "And to the angel of the church in Pergamos," I believe he's writing to the pastor or the minister there, "these things saith he which hath the sharp sword with two edges, I know thy works, and where thou dwellest, even where Satan's seat is. And thou holdest fast my name, and hast not denied my faith, even in those days when Antipas was my faithful martyr, who was slain among you where Satan dwelleth." This doesn't sound very good for a church, does it? "But I have a few things against thee, because thou hast there them that hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat those things sacrificed unto idols, and to commit fornication." The last book of the Bible, and he drags up the story of Balaam. He says, "You have those that hold the doctrine of Balaam." You allow those to be functioning that have the doctrine of Balaam. There is something about this that causes us immediately to realize that what Balaam did was serious. And it was not something that was just maybe you can pardon my expression, but Balaam's scheme was not a harebrained idea. There was a devious plot or scheme. It was he was an artifice. He was capable in what he was doing. It was a cleverly designed trick, is what he presented. A cleverly designed trick on the Israelites. So I believe today that I could pretty confidently and safely put a label on Balaam that he was a politician. He was someone that he had something in mind, and he was willing to think about it. Now, I have a lot of things in my life and in my career that I've had to think about. Just how am I going to accomplish the things I want to accomplish? How am I going to solve a problem that I'm faced with? And many of you have similar things in your everyday life. You're wondering, how do I achieve the level of expertise that I'm have a reputation for? How do I do this without damaging myself, damaging my equipment, and being able to be somewhat productive in the process? And you're faced with that. But this was not in a good manner. Balaam was plotting and scheming and thinking, how do I deliver something that will cause destruction and devastation? He was a politician. So I'd like to go to the story. I'd like to go back now to, we're going to kind of go backwards into the story, maybe for the benefit of not being as familiar with it as reading it every day, but let's go to Numbers in the Old Testament, chapter 31, and read a couple verses here. Numbers chapter 31, or read verses 15 and 16. So to kind of give you an idea of about how far back we went in time here, Moses is alive, and the situation here is that Moses has chosen out warriors out of each tribe, soldiers, and they had went out and overcome the Midianites, and they had brought back, they had been engaged in warfare and had been victorious. God had helped them to bring deliverance to his people. And verse 15, and Moses said unto them, have you saved all the women alive? Now, I'm not a bigot, but I want you to get the message that's in this story. He says, have you saved all the women alive? Verse 16, Moses is speaking here. He says, behold, these caused the children of Israel through the counsel of Balaam to commit trespass against the Lord in the matter of Peor. And there was a plague among the congregation of the Lord. Have you saved the ones that were the instruments that Balaam counseled our enemies to use? Did you save those? They were bringing back the things that they had captured in their conflict. They brought the gold. They brought the livestock. They brought the spoils of the battle. And they brought the women. Did you bring those? These are the ones that Balaam helped orchestrate a scheme and a plan. A deep contrivance, an artifice against the people of Israel. I'd like to back up a little more. In Numbers chapter 25, and we'll notice here, we're looking at the effect of the counsel and the scheme of a politician. He says in verse 1, chapter 25, he says, "And Israel abode in Shittim," that's a location, "and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab." We could read the previous three chapters, and I want to back up and just give the account of how Balaam came on the scene. So the Israelites, I'm going to try to tell this in my own words. You're welcome to read it all for yourself. But the Israelites had been delivered from their captivity in Egypt, and they were on their journey through the wilderness coming to the Canaan land. And as they were coming along, they came to the land of Moab. And as they came to different places, they let the rulers of those countries that they were passing through say, "Look, we've got a destination we're going to. We're just going to pass through. And there was a big group of people. So the Moabites said, "You're not coming through here. You're not coming through our land, because when you go through, it just wipes the earth clean. There's no grass left. You burn up all the firewood. No, you're not coming through here." And the king of Moab, his name was Balak, not Balaam, B-A-L-A-K. Balak said, "We need to curse these people. They're too many for us. We can't do battle with them. They'll overthrow us. But they should be cursed." So he heard about this man named Balaam that was supposed to be in contact with God. And he sent his representatives, he sent his servants down and said, "Balak, come and curse this people. They look like flies. There's so many of them. I want you to come up and curse these people so they'll go away and they won't bother. They won't come through our land and cause us all this trouble." And Balaam prayed about it. And God told him, "Don't do that. That's my people." And the servants of Balak came back and said, "Oh, we'll make you rich and honorable, and we'll give you all kinds of rewards if you'll come." And Balaam foolishly said, "Well, let me pray about that again. Maybe I'll get a different answer." You know, there's another message there, but if we're looking for a different answer from the Lord, He might just let us jump to conclusions. And that's really what happened. Balaam went back and prayed again, and he said, maybe I'll go with you. Because God told him, "If you go, don't you say anything that I don't tell you to say. You better not say anything. Don't say anything that I don't authorize you to say." And Balaam thought, "Okay, that means I can go." So he left. And on the road, he didn't get very far. And his donkey tried to get rid of him. Y'all remember that? Kind of rubbed him up against the wall. And he began to get mad at his donkey and threatened to kill his donkey. And he got a little further and the donkey just stopped and refused to go. And he got off and was about ready to, I think he was beating his donkey. And that's when the donkey talked to him. You remember that? And said, "Why are you beating me these three times or whatever?" I mean, how many signs does God have to give a person before they realize you might be on the wrong road? You might be doing something I don't approve of. But, there was something working in Balaam's mind. The thought of being able to be wealthy and to be able to have prestige and honor caused him to begin to start thinking, "How can I get that? How can I do that and still retain my reputation as being someone that's in contact with God?" So I'm going to try to move fast forward as best I can. He got there. to Balak. And Balak took him up and he said, look out over this mountain. Look at those people down there. They're just thick as hair on a cat's back. He didn't say it that way, but that's what he meant. They're just everywhere. They just fill up the whole. I want you to curse them and make them get sick and die and go away. I don't want them to come through my plan, my place. And Balaam said, well, you're going to have to build some altars up here and prepare some sacrifices. So they built altars and burnt sacrifices, and I don't know what all they did. And Balak got up there, and you know what he did? He actually did what God told him to do. He only said good things. He blessed the Israelites instead of cursed them. And he done that three different times. Balak, the king, took him to different locations so he could get a different perspective and see how intimidating these Israelites were. Balaam didn't say anything bad about the Israelites. And Balak was not very happy with him. I sent for you to do a job for me, and all you've done is bless my enemies. Last verse of the 24th chapter says, Balaam rose up and went and returned to his place, and Balak also went his way. They parted ways, but there was something that happened before they parted ways. Because the first verse of the next chapter is the one I just read to you a while ago. And Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab. Do you remember what Moses said? Did you save the women? These are the ones that were part of the council of Balaam. These are the ones that created, was part of the big plan to cause us to fall into an idolatrous practice. So stay with me here. And they called the people unto the sacrifices. This is verse 2, chapter 25 of Numbers. And they called the people unto the sacrifice of their gods, and the people did eat. It bowed down to their gods. This is idolatrous worship. This is very displeasing to the Lord. And Israel joined himself unto Baal Peor, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. Baal Peor was the idol that the children of Moab worshiped. And the Lord said unto Moses, take all the heads of the people and hang them up before the Lord against the sun, that the fierce anger of the Lord may be turned away from Israel. It was a terrible consequence that happened because the people turned away from the Lord. All because of a skillful politician that instituted a plan. You know what his plan was? His plan was, and his advice to the king of Moab, Balak, he said, I can't prophesy against them and I can't curse them because God won't let me. But I'm going to tell you how you can do this. You can't overthrow them because there's too many of them. They're on, God is with them. You got to undermine their reputation with God. That's the only way you'll be able to do it. So he said, you bring your idolatrous worship down in a place where it's visible to them. And then you bring your most attractive women and put them out in a very provocative positions in front of them, and you'll entice them to come. And once you get them over there, because you've attracted them with sensuality and the lust of the flesh, little by little, you'll get them to begin to worship your God. And when you do that, that's serious consequence with the God of heaven. And when you do that, you're going to undermine their power and their strength, and you'll be able to overthrow them. Sounds like a scheme, doesn't it? Sounds like a trick. Does it sound any different than the world we live in today? I won't use the words that he used, but I had a used car salesman came into the shop I worked at a number of years ago, and he was a man of the wisdom of this world, and it was a time when everybody thought car sales were down, or I don't remember now the situation, but they asked him, said, how's your car sales? Oh, not too bad. It's doing good. Oh, what do you attribute that to? And he said, he used other words, but he basically said, sensuality sells everything. You know, that's the world we live in. Everywhere around, there's a plot, there's a scheme. Get our attraction to sensual things, off of the things of God, off of the things that are holy, and they can sell us a bag of goods. They can bring us into deception to where we would worship something besides the one true God. That's what happened to the Israelites. That's how they got weakened in that condition, is because that was Balaam's counsel. He was being a politician. He had a deep contrivance. He had a trick, and he had a plan. I'll read you some things that a commentator said about this verse that I read, this first verse of chapter 25. It says, Israel had bravely resisted and no doubt had been more than conquerors. But now that he sends his beautiful women among them, talking about Balak, and invites them to his idolatrous feast, the Israelites basely yield and are shamefully overcome. Those are smitten with harlots that could not be smitten with the sword. Note, we are more endangered by the charms of a smiling world than by the terrors of a frowning world. I think we ought to remember that. We are more smitten and endangered by the charms of a smiling world than the terrors of a frowning world. That the daughters of Moab were their tempters and conquerors. They were their tempters and conquerors. Ever since Eve was first in the transgression, the fairer gender, though the weaker, has been a snare to many. Yea, strong men have been wounded and slain by the lips of a strange woman. You can go read in Proverbs chapter 7. The whole chapter is about what happens when a man is drawn away by those kind of things. And Solomon was snared by many women, wasn't he? He fell into a disastrous place with the Lord because he allowed himself to be attracted by the smiles of the world. But that's not all there is to this story. It sounds like this is the end for the Israelites, doesn't it? It doesn't have to end there, and it didn't end there. We could begin in verse 5 of Numbers chapter 25, but I'd really like to skip down to verse 6. And behold, one of the children of Israel came and brought unto his brethren a Midianitish woman in the sight of Moses. This is in the camp. Something that would never have been thought of possible, maybe in the past. When Balaam was up there burning sacrifices to that idolatrous God and trying to pronounce a curse that God wouldn't let him pronounce, this wouldn't happen. It was off limits. You don't bring that into the camp of Israel. But here it says things have changed. What changed? The scheme, the trick, and the plan had been put into place. And behold, one of the children of Israel came and brought unto his brethren a Midianitish woman in the sight of Moses and the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel who were weeping before the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. There were people that were mourning the loss they had of their power with God. And when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, saw it, he rose up from among the congregation and took a javelin in his hand and went after the man of Israel into the tent and thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman, through her belly. So the plague was stayed from the children of Israel. And those that died in the plague were 24,000. 24,000 people were lost because they had allowed idolatrous worship to come in to their midst. Did you know there would have been more if there hadn't have been for this man named Phinehas? He stayed the plague. Why did he stay? How could he stay the plague? Because he was not willing to be subdued by the plot and by the scheme. He was a representative of what God intended him to be a representative of. He wasn't falling in under the plan, and he wasn't being part of the plot of the politician. You know, I'd like for our whole community to know the Lord. We sang that song earlier about, what was the song that you selected, Sister Carol? About Christ being crucified for each one of us. And I believe you said after the song was ended, you wished that everyone could say that. I wish everyone could say, he was crucified for me. I don't have a master plan. It's because I don't want people to follow the Lord because of a trick. I don't want them to feel like I've snagged them. I want them to come to the Lord because they see a value, they recognize it would benefit them, and they see something that I want to focus on in the last part of our thought. They see a representative. I got a text at the end of the day, Friday. My neighbor said, Dan, you got a calf out. It's in the neighbor's field. So I texted him back. I said, is it in the wheat field or is it in the grass? He said, oh, it's over on the north side of his driveway. I thought, oh boy, the creek is next and then another field. And so I got home and realized that he had got back towards our place. And I told Anita, I said, you're going to have to come and help me to get my calf in. There was two of them out by then. So we got over there and they were enjoying what little green grass there was, and we got the gate kind of open. Well, you know what happens when you go over there, the rest of them come over there too, and if I open the gate, then there's more could come through the gate. And I'm thinking, Lord, how do we get this that works? So I opened the gate just a little bit and we got around the calves, and of course they run past the gate. And I opened the gate a little bit more and we got them around, and we finally got one interested, and he felt pressure from us, so he jumped through the gate and got in. But the other one, we spent quite a bit of time going around and around, and we finally tricked him into going in where there was no grass, just hay. And I got the fence fixed. I don't want to catch people for the Lord like that. I want the gate to be open. I want there to be an invitation. I want to do the best I can to live it and explain it to them. I don't want to be a Balaam trying to trick people to do something that they don't see that's valuable. But I want to be a representative. I want to be someone. I want us as a group of people here in this little place to be a representative, one that represents the Lord, that's able to paint a picture that others says, you know, I see something that I've never seen quite like that before, and I want it. I want it for myself. The thing that you can do with livestock, for those of you that's worked with livestock, you know, all you got to have is one that likes a bucket of grain. If you got one that likes a bucket of grain, you can go out there with a bucket of grain and lead the whole herd down the path. You could lead them into the trailer that's taking them to the slaughterhouse with a bucket of grain. I loaded a bull in a very shaky pen with grain. Not because I got behind him and poked him, and not because I got a hold of his ears and pulled him, but just with grain. I want people to come to the Lord because they see something and they realize the value of it. I'd like for us to turn to Matthew, the 7th chapter. And as we're turning there, I want us to realize that the devil is out there trying to trick every one of us that are saved. And he's trying to trick the people that are not connected with God at all into deeper and deeper vices. He wants to cause you to succumb to his trickery and his plots, and he wants to destroy you. He doesn't care what it cost him, and he doesn't really care how long it takes. But there's a song that says, sin will take you farther than you meant to go. It'll keep you longer than you meant to stay. And it'll cost you far more than you ever meant to pay. But I want us to look, Matthew chapter 7. These are some of Jesus' words. We begin reading in verse 15. And notice the difference between this and the way Balaam presented the plan to get the Israelites to fail. Notice verse 15. He says, beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. Isn't that what Balaam was? You shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? What do you think? Do grapevines have thorns on them? Does a fig tree have thistles? Some of y'all might know something about a fig, and some of you might know something about a grape, and I'm pretty sure neither one of them have thorns and thistles. He says, even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them. What kind of person was Balaam? He was corrupt. I don't know if he ever got any wealth and honor from Balak, but I know the Israelites slew him. When they went, that little account I read to you about them coming back from their victory and having all the spoils, you know that they named the kings that they had destroyed, and they also said they slew Balaam. He didn't live long to enjoy whatever recognition he got. You know, whatever pleasure sin in the world presents to us, they won't be gratifying long term. But the Lord has something else for us. He says, by their fruits you shall know them. You know, a representative represents where he come from. I went down to the visitation the other evening and haven't spoke to Sister Jan in quite a while, but when I went up to her and spoke to her and told her who I was, because she's blind and she can't see, and she said, I didn't recognize you, but I hear that little southern twang now. You know, she recognizes me by the tone of my voice and the words that I use. You know, it's pretty hard to disguise someone that's sincere and genuine. We need to have the fruit. It's pretty hard to, you know, you can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig. It's pretty hard to disguise deception and corruption too. And I want people to see the Lord through you and I. I want the people to see the Lord. I want them to say, I don't know how it works, but I want some of what they got. I want to know the Lord. I'd like to go to Luke, the 10th chapter. And notice here, it's at the end of a parable. Luke chapter 10, verse 37. It's a parable of the Good Samaritan. Y'all know that story. If you read much of the Bible, you know about the Good Samaritan. And at the end of it, you know, the whole story got started, the whole parable got started because someone come to him, to Jesus, and said, well, who is my neighbor? You know, it was like he wanted to be off of the hook. He didn't want to be neighborly, so he said, who is my neighbor? And he told the story of the Good Samaritan. And at the end, verse 37, and he said, maybe verse 36, he says, which now of these three thinkest thou was neighbor unto him that fell among the thieves? And the man that had asked the question about who is my neighbor, he said, he that showed mercy on him, that said, then said Jesus unto him, what did he say? Go and do likewise. You be a representative of that very same thing. Don't go and do something different. Don't try to trick people into thinking that if you'll really become a Christian, you'll be rich and famous. Because that's really not what it's about. It's about being a representative of the characteristics of God. About being a neighbor. About being genuine and your fruits being able to be manifested, and who the type of person you really are. I'm not different when you're not with me. If you surprise me, you ought to find the same thing that you find here. He said to him, go and do likewise. I'd like to go to John, the 15th chapter. We'll be done real soon. John chapter 15, in verse 1 beginning. He said, Jesus is speaking again. He says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, he pruneth, purgeth it, that it may bring forth more fruit. Now ye are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. Abide in me, and I in you, as a branch cannot bear fruit of itself, except it abide in the vine. No more can ye, except ye abide in me. We are to be part of this vine, to be connected, to be a representative, not a politician. I don't have a plan. There may be some people that think they have a plan to cause people to want to come and be part of their organization. I want people to get a hold of God. I really do. Because I know that God can make a difference in people's lives. You got a brokenness in your life, Jesus can fix it. I probably can't, but Jesus can. You got a wound that won't heal because of something that's happened in the past, you know, Jesus can make it better. A little child fall and bump themselves, and parents, grandparents pick it up and kiss the poor little finger that pinched or the head that got bumped, and they might say something like, it's all better now. And they get up and smile. And, you know, Jesus can do that for you. I don't have any trickery to bring you. I just want you to know that Jesus is the answer to it all. He says here, if a man abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch and is withered. And men gather them and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. If ye abide in me and my words abide in you, ye shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done unto you. That's powerful. It's powerful when God's people are united in their prayers, in their lives before Him. It was powerful for the Israelites. And that's why the Moabites were fearful. That's why they wanted them to be cursed. That's why they wanted them to disappear. That's why they became part of the plan and the plot. He says here, you shall ask what you will, and it shall be done unto you. Herein is my Father glorified, that you bear much fruit. So shall you be my disciples. As the Father hath loved me, so have I loved you. Continue ye in my love. If you keep my commandment, ye shall abide in my love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. You know, Jesus was a representative of God's love to mankind. When he left us an example to follow. He intends for us to be a representative of God's love to mankind in wholesomeness, in genuineness, in being the type to be in being a child of God. I think all of you here have a perception of what a child ought to be, a representative of their parents. They will be, good or bad. We are to be an example, just like Jesus was an example of his Father's love. We are to be an example to the world. We are to be a representative. If I'm to be an example, I will not maneuver myself or God's word to coerce you into conformity. You hear that? I'm to be an example. And I'm not going to tell you, you're going to lose out if you're not in this place. But I want you to want to be here. I want you to want to be a child of God. I want you to want to be part of a flywheel that's gaining momentum, that becomes more and more powerful. I want you to be here. I want you to be part of the family of God. I want us to be a representative to the world, and I want us to be a representative to one another. I don't know that I have the words, but the words of the song, I'm so glad I'm a part of the family of God, has come to my mind. And I wonder if we could stand and sing that. And I want us to think about the type of representative we are. The type of representative of a Christian. The type of representative of the Church of God. Of this little congregation. What kind of representative am I? So, we might stand, someone might lead us in that song. I'm so glad I'm part of the family of God. You pray for me.